Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show. When I die, please make AI videos of me saying crazy shit and causing havoc. Now, I don't think Bibi's dead, mind you, but what a great story if he were dead and he was like still causing international incidents while dead. He's not dead. From the people I've spoken to, he's not dead, but it's a good, it's a nice idea that whenever a leader were to die now, we just have to sift through things that they put out and wonder, is this real? Is this not? This guy's saying Genghis Khan is going to beat Jesus. That would be so much more funny if he were dead. If he were dead and then they were sitting there and they go, Bibi's got a list of things he wants us to use AI to make him say. And then one of them is Genghis Khan has the advantage over Jesus because evil wins, according to Benjamin Netanyahu. And a lot of people are thinking the guy's dead. I don't think he's dead, but this is like big speculation. I've even texted people. I've said, hey, is this guy dead? And then people were like, well, we don't think so, but we don't really know. And then people are sending you videos back and forth of him like, yeah, here he is. This is Bibi Netanyahu, still alive, perhaps.
Also wrote The Lessons of History. Very brief, 100-page book, in which he said, well, history proves that, unfortunately and unhappily, Jesus Christ has no advantage over Genghis Khan. Because if you are strong enough, ruthless enough, powerful enough, evil will overcome good.
Which side are we, BB? Stop that for a minute. Hold on. Who are we? Now that we've united with you, who are we here? Are we Genghis Khan? What are we? Are we the, we're not the Jesus side, right? Tell me exactly what, who are we in this allegory? What exactly is this? Continue.
So you have no choice.
But to kill them
all.
If
you look at the world as it is today, you have to be blind not to see.
Right.
That the democracies led by the United States have to reassert their will to defend themselves
against people who
aren't
threatened.
To oppose their enemies in time, while there's still time, before the jarring gong of danger.
Did you just say the jarring gong of danger? Roll that back.
Before the jarring gong of danger wakes them up and wakes them up too late. This is where we are now. The fact that people don't see that, the fact that a lot of the news media are harking
on. I mean, this guy, this, hold on. This is the drug addict in the house who's got all the family in the living room going, everybody accuses me of everything. Nobody trusts me. Every time money is missing, you ask me about it. My boyfriend was in this house for 5 minutes, and yet you think me and him took your money. This is insane. I'm going to move out, and I'm going to move out because I have been attacked. The relentless attacks from the people in this house, all the while she's got your money in the pocket. Like this, I have never seen a more violent person talk more about the need for peace. It's the craziest. I've never in my life seen gaslighting like this. This is the most violent person I've like ever seen. This guy cannot get out of a war. They're in wars you don't even know they're in. Ground troops in Lebanon. He's got guys talking shit to Turkey already. This guy's so off the chain. And yet he's talking about peace and Jesus and Genghis Khan. And even if you have righteousness with you, that's not enough. You gotta confront all the enemies, and all the enemies are anyone he thinks is an enemy or who could become an enemy. It's the gaslighting of the century. It is the drug addict in your house. Every household has a drug addict who gets on a soapbox and starts saying, I cannot believe I am being accused again of stealing money from my older sister. I don't have to take this just because I've been to rehab 5 times and you found the money in my room and I don't know who put it there, but it was to frame me. I will not participate in this. I've never seen a person, because the thing about Bibi Netanyahu is he's kind of soft-spoken. You know, he's not, I'm not going to say he's unsuspecting, because he's certainly not. He's been around a bit. But I mean, this guy, he cannot, there's nothing that will be enough for him. And the people that really support this, the people that are like, well, it is in America's interest to be in an unwinnable war with Iran and have the Straits of Hormuz close and have oil go up and have, you know, potential repercussions financially and to lose all their relationships with the Gulf states and to have the Gulf pull money out of projects in Silicon Valley and Wall Street and Hollywood and all these different places and have our economy go belly up and have a draft and then a nuclear war. It is in America's interest. And if you suggest otherwise, you're an anti-Semite and a pig. It's everything I just listed is happening. It's not like a thing that might happen. It's literally happening. Get Pete Hegseth up. This guy, he's coming out every few days and going, we're winning this war, and there's no evidence of that. Every few days, Pete Hegseth comes out and says something more ludicrous about what we're going to do to the Iranians. He's like, we're gonna skin them. And you're like, well, we're not doing anything, actually. He said something we're sharing the ocean with the Iranians. We're giving them the floor tonight. Tonight, they're getting the floor of the ocean. It's like, this guy doesn't talk like a Secretary of Defense. I'm sorry, Secretary of War, which I don't know how good he is at. The whole thing is an embarrassment. And the reason that America is not just going to walk away from this is because it would really show the world that the American empire is in a stage of terminal decline and our dollar would probably be in trouble. Here's Pete Hegseth saying, we hold the cards, which, by the way, that means like nukes. What are the cards? Pete Hegseth, everyone, friend of the show.
Why are we helping Israel prosecute this war if they're going to pursue their own objectives?
We hold the cards. Yeah. We have objectives.
Good.
Those objectives are clear.
That's right. What are they? Stop that. By the way, what the fuck are they? The objectives are clear. The only time they went near an objective was when they said Iran can't have a nuke, and everyone was like, whatever, okay. Do they have a nuke? Are they close to a nuke? Because this guy, Bibi, has been saying they've had a nuke for 30 years. Well, they're enriching uranium. Okay. Didn't we bomb their nuclear enrichment sites at Fordo and other places? We bombed them. Well, yeah, but it didn't do enough. Oh, so what's the goal here? Regime change? Right. So troops on the ground? No. Right, so regime change, though. How would that happen? Well, it'd be a popular uprising. The people of the country? Yeah. Which people? The people that don't like the regime. Yeah, are they hardliners? Are they more progressive? They'll figure it out. So the people are going to overthrow the Revolutionary Guard that we can't get rid of. Something like that. Oh, okay. Let's watch the rest of Pete here. Maybe I'm wrong. Pete Hegseth.
And the truth speaks for itself. I mean, President Trump was very clear about that. Iran has weaponized energy for decades. Israel clearly sent a warning, and POTUS has made it clear, very clear. Iran knows when you hit Karg Island and you hit military capabilities on Karg Island, which is the only thing we hit, we can hold anything at issue, anything. The United States military controls the fate of that country. Iran has the ability to make the right choices. It should not, going forward, target Arab allies, Arab countries, trying to create pain, the pain that they created themselves. Thank you all very much.
What?
Thank you for your time.
I mean, this guy, they should not try to create pain, the pain that they created themselves. We attacked their country. We killed the leader of their country. Like during Ramadan, whatever you feel about the dude, I don't want to live in fucking Iran. But this idea that this is like a moral imperative that we need to be out there helping the Iranians set up a new government whilst a lot of Americans get killed. It's a little ridiculous. Little ridiculous. Pretty stupid. Maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. Passengers trapped in Waymo after a homeless man threatens to kill them for giving money to a robot. This is an interesting story. It's a human interest story. I think we're going to see more stories like this that are actually, I think, kind of life-affirming and encouraging here, just to take a break from international news. So now here is people sheltering for their life in a Waymo.
Why are you in the trunk?
That's why, man. I'm trying to figure this out. Like, I'm over here. Yeah, they won't let me out.
Why are you in it?
Huh?
New at 11 tonight, scary moments in this driverless rideshare. This Waymo stop is raising a lot of questions tonight. How did a stranger end up in the trunk? A woman says she ordered the driverless taxi for her daughter on Monday in MacArthur Park, and when it arrived, they noticed the man inside the trunk. Apparently, he'd entered the car after a previous driver left the trunk open at a drop-off. The video has since gone viral. We did reach out to Waymo for a statement. The company says they are committed to keeping their riders safe, adding, quote, "This experience was unacceptable, and we're actively implementing changes to address this."
Give them five off. Give them $5 off and tell them to fuck off. To fuck off. Listen. Homeless people, there's a natural symbiosis, and I've seen it, between homeless people and robots. Homeless people and robots are going to really start they're going to start building bonds because they're out late at night. It's true. If you walk down a street, a lot of times you'll just see homeless people, Waymos, and the food delivery robots. And they've created a community of their own. It's a community of their own. You're in your bed with your head tucked on your pillow, wondering how you can, buy a cabin somewhere. But homeless people are out there on the front lines with the robots. The Waymos, the food delivery bots. The homeless people are negotiating this new reality more than anyone else. So you can't separate them. Think of why this is kind of brilliant. The homeless have been discarded by society. But everyone soon will be discarded by society. So the homeless people know this. And they see the robots as kind of a justification of their life and their choices. Not to blame homeless people for it, but the homeless people get very excited with these robots. Sometimes they fight with them. Sometimes they'll jump on top of them. Sometimes they're just really high and they're just kind of stare at each other. But homeless people are saying, oh, it wasn't just us. Soon they're going to get rid of everybody. And there's something probably oddly fulfilling if you're a homeless person in that, and freeing. There's something freeing if you're a homeless person. Go, well, I'm not going to get a job because everyone on the street's a robot. That's really what you have. So you have a lot of homeless people that are tragically addicted to drugs, befriending And sometimes it's adversarial. But creating and living in communities with robots in a way that a lot of regular people are not. You know, so this is really what's happening. In January, Doug Fulop was riding home from a night out in San Francisco when a man crossed the street in front of his car, doubled back, and began screaming at him. The man punched the car's windows and tried lifting up the vehicle. He then yelled that he wanted to kill Mr. Fulop and the other two passengers for giving money to a robot. A taxi driver would have simply driven away, but Mr. Fulop's vehicle had no driver. It was a Waymo. We felt helpless, said Mr. Fulop, 37, who works in the tech industry. Since autonomous cars started roaming San Francisco streets almost 4 years ago, they have elicited an array of reactions from humans. Angry protests. They've created an unexpected hazard for passengers of self-driving cars all around the city. So there's going to be homeless people that celebrate these things, and there will be homeless vigilantes. There will be homeless vigilantes, and they are the best of us. If you're homeless and still care about the society enough to fight back, to fight a Waymo, you know, things like that. You know, I don't condone it. I'm certainly not suggesting it. But it takes character to be as such a, you can't get more marginalized than being homeless. I know it's hard to be a queer, you know, actor at the Oscars or whatever. I know it's hard. But imagine being homeless. That's like got to be like kind of worse. Now, if that person can muster up enough rage to say we have to fight these machines. But I don't, you know, I don't know how it's going to go. It's hard to know because the homeless are the first line of defense. They are. When the robot, and I don't like any of this, but when the robot police come out, they're going to get good on the homeless. It's not something I like saying. And the homeless know that. When the robot police start patrolling the streets, when Peter Thiel's accountability bots are unleashed into the downtown streets, they are going to be training on homeless people. And there will be a room, and there will be a closed-circuit TV at Palantir or some such company, and they will all be watching a robot downtown, and that robot will be fighting 20 or 30 homeless people, and some nights the homeless will win. Some nights the homeless will win, and it'll go on YouTube, and we'll watch it, and we'll say the homeless downed an accountability bot. They downed one of the bots in downtown LA. 35 homeless people attacked it in a coordinated way. Homeless people are just going to start attacking these things in a coordinated way. They are our first line of defense. They are the Minutemen. It's just what's going to happen. This is where society is going very quickly. It's going to AI-driven security apparatus. One of the reasons that horrible girls school, that horrible attack on the girls school in Iran happened was because we're using AI to pick targets. So AI is already a major player in this war that's not going so hot. And it's going to, you know, all this stuff that gets debuted in like a foreign war zone is going to hit the American streets. It's going to hit the American streets. And who's going to fight? You? I think not. The homeless, the unhoused. And there'll be thousands more of them at that point. But that's what's going to happen. These are going to be the initial clashes. So now everyone's complaining to me about these airports. They're getting really, really bad. Because what's going on? Is it the TSA? Is it government shutdown? The TSA has had enough. Stop screening people. You want to hear it? You want to hear a solution? Stop screening them. Get on the fucking plane. Whatever happens, happens. Get on the fucking plane. If you want to go to Phoenix that much, just get on the fucking plane. Who cares? The cockpit door's locked. Who gives a shit? A couple of people might fucking have a bomb. You want to wait in line or do you want a chlorine bomb to go off an hour outside of Orlando? It doesn't matter. Just get on the plane. Just get on the plane. Security line snake out of more terminals as TSA goes unpaid. Well, this is the government shutdown thing. Stop traveling. I don't know what to tell you people. Find a place you like and stay there for a minute. This is not exactly the time to be gallivanting all over the world. Are you going to be an American tourist right now, you psychopath? We're destabilizing the globe. What kind of psychopath are you going to be right now? You're going to go to Italy and tell them why they're fucked because we're attacking Iran? And we've driven the price of oil up and everything's gone insane? Have the decency to not inflict yourself on the rest of the world at this point. Do you think anyone wants you? Does anyone want the American tourist right now telling people how it is? Oh, it's the ugly American here who's blowing up the world with Israel, everyone's other favorite country. Oh, good, it's America and Israel, everyone's favorites. Everyone's favorites. Tell them where the best cheese shop is. It's America and Israel. You know, us in Israel right now are like just two junky meth heads the town has had enough of. The town has had enough of this behavior. I mean, us in Israel, we have, this is, nobody is excited right now to hear anything about the United States or Israel. No one in this world wants to hear about that. Sorry, nobody wants to hear about that right now. So instead of getting on a plane to Scotland so you can go tell everyone that you're from America and how important it is that the Ayatollah had to get whacked during Ramadan and that they should look out for more refugees and more terrorist attacks in their countries, that's coming soon. Just tell them, go, during our destabilizing of the world, we've all decided we want to travel. We've all decided we want to travel after lighting the fuse that might lead to World War III. We've decided we always wanted to see Edinburgh. We wanted to have high tea at the castle after we've lit the fuse that might start World War III. Have the decency to stay in your home, for Christ, please. No one wants to see your fucking face or mine. No one wants to see us right now. The fuck are you going to go to Spain and drink wine in the park and be like, well, Israel has the right to defend itself. No one wants this shit from you. A bunch of fat American fucking psychopaths invading your country to tell you about that Israel needs to attack 19 other countries? You guys should really help us with this Strait of Hormuz. They're going to start kidnapping Americans in these countries and killing them publicly, and they won't be wrong. They're going to start kidnapping Americans out of their hotels and throwing them in the middle of the street and lighting them on fire. We're literally destabilizing the world, okay? We're destabilizing the planet Earth, like, in a major way. And Americans' main concern right now is how they can get their fat ass on a cruise to one of the other countries who we're also fucking in the process of this. By the way, it's the thing about Americans. We'll never not travel. We don't care. We'll nuke Iran. We'll start a nuclear exchange, and then we'll get on a flight to Paris. We don't care. We will straight up bring the world to nuclear Armageddon, and then we will go and take a, a, a tour of a winemaking a vineyard in Italy. We don't care. Can you imagine being the American abroad right now? Like, I have a friend who just booked a solo trip into Europe, and he's young and attractive, and it's like, whatever. And he doesn't look American. Big help. Can you imagine being the American right now, like on vacation? Hey, do you have any ketchup? Do you have any ketchup? We just bombed Lebanon. We're going to bomb everyone. Maybe even you. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants this stuff. Nobody wants it. And yes, anti-Semitism is bad. We know this, but we cannot call every criticism of this war anti-Semitic. We can't call every criticism of Israel's influence on our politics anti-Semitism. This is silly. The people that are trying to make this case that this is like a necessary war, they're really having a hard time of it. They're really having a tough time. When you listen to them, they're like, well, the thing is about like Iran is that, you know, they've always been an antagonist and they've always been trying to kill Americans and they say death to America. They say really bad things. And so I think it's important that we confront them. They fund proxy armies and there's not one actual actionable, like if we didn't do this, we'd be fucked. So this is an interesting story. This is about Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go players unknowingly trained a 30 billion image AI map, which is now powering Coco food delivery robots. Now, I love the food delivery robots. I don't love Coco as much. I love the other kind with the googly eyes. Coco's fine. Coco has eyes, too. I just think the design sucks. Now, I used to remember people were playing Pokemon Go in New York City, and I would say, I would, like, watch them play Pokemon Go, and they'd be like, these would be grown adults, and they'd be running around, like, the C train in New York, and I'd go, hey, guys, what are you doing? And they'd be like, there's one over there. And I was like, what? And they explained to me that they were chasing these imaginary Pokemon all over New York City, and this was, you know, at the height of my mother's schizophrenia, and I just thought it was interesting, you know, what the breaking point is in anyone's mind. But this was a game where people were just trying to collect all different Pokemon. However, the company Niantic says that photos and scans collected through Pokemon Go and its augmented reality apps have produced a massive data set of more than 30 billion real-world images. Well, yeah, the company is now using that data to power visual navigation for delivery robots, letting them identify exact locations on city streets without relying on GPS. I mean, so these are what Pokemon Go did Israel have before the Gaza genocide, by the way? You know they had one. Every new game will end in some AI mapping and some type of attack grid. This new augmented reality game has led to a new targeting system. I mean, that's what it's going to be. You're going to participate in a relatively harmless, silly game from a company that you've never heard of or know very little about. And then you will have unwittingly mapped out an area for drone strikes where people can be killed. What's going to happen? That's how they're going to do it. There's little fun games, little quick games, little silly games. And then you're going to go, well, that's funny. I've now participated in some type of infrared targeting map, so we know what installations to be need to go. So that's what's going to happen. You know, I mean, it's just something that you're just going to have to weigh it. You're going to have to weigh it. Maybe the game's fun. maybe the game's fun and you have to weigh it. You go, I wonder what this is being used for, actually. You'll be playing it with a bunch of people, you know? You'll be playing some augmented reality Harry Potter game. And you're going to go, interesting, I wonder what this is really for. And they'll, you know, it's all facial recognition and geolocating and everything. What are you going to do? You can't avoid it. This is a lot of what we're seeing with this stuff right now. This is coming on very strong. And I wanted to talk about this because it is coming on very strong. There is a inevitability to this. And I think a lot of people, there's an unspoken anxiety in the air. And that anxiety, I think, is directly related to the fact that we're being ushered into this new world without much of an understanding of its costs or its benefits. And it's completely and utterly inevitable. We don't really have any say in what happens next. And there's an anxiety to that. It's one of the reasons you are more anxious on a plane than in a car. In a car, statistically, you're much more likely to die. But in a plane, you have no control over what happens. So you're sitting there and there's turbulence, or there's a storm, or there's a rough landing, and you're trusting two people you've never seen, never heard of, and of course the equipment and the machine. And I think there's an anxiety in our culture right now where people go, we don't have a say. We don't exactly get a vote on what happens next, how quickly these jobs are eliminated, what the privacy rights embedded into these systems are, what type of, how much of our social life is going to be orchestrated by these? How much of our financial life will be dependent on this? How much of our security is going to be dependent on all this stuff? And it doesn't help that whenever any of the people that run these companies come out, they're talking about Satan or they're being accused of killing someone who worked for them. You know, no one feels great about this. No, you know, there's no like, where's like the AI Dave Thomas? Remember Dave Thomas? He had a daughter and he fed her burgers and they had a thing called Wendy's and people trusted him. Dave Thomas, a chubby guy, and he'd say, Wendy likes her bacon or whatever. I don't remember what it was, but the point is this, you trusted Dave Thomas. Where the fuck is Dave Thomas? Sam Altman's not doing it. Peter Thiel's not doing it. Where is AI's Dave Thomas, an old folksy guy that goes, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're geomapping a map that's going to be used to help people. Isn't that good? Don't you want the robots to see where they're going so they can bring you the medicine? You go, oh, interesting. They're going to be bringing us medicine? And among other things, that's what AI needs desperately. It needs desperately some type of spokesperson that everyone isn't automatically completely disturbed by. Is there one person in that industry that can function as a spokesman that we're not all completely and utterly horrified by? Within several minutes of them opening their mouth, every figure in that world, from Zuckerberg, everyone on down in the tech world, is horrifying. So what they need, get an old Wendy's commercial. Just play us. This is what people want. Yeah, play this one.
The road leading to Wendy's next great chicken sandwich is a hard one. fraught with disappointments and dead ends. But when you're Dave Thomas and you're starting with Wendy's whole breast fillet, you don't give up.
I think I'm onto something.
Introducing Wendy's Mozzarella Chicken Supreme, an all-white meat fillet, mozzarella, and a creamy parmesan sauce. One bite and you'll jump up and say,
gee, this is pretty good.
Exactly. Come try one today.
You trusted him. You trusted him. You felt good with him. You trusted the man. And he's in the kitchen. He's making mistakes. It's not easy. And he's saying, we went through a lot of different formulas here to find the whatever it was, mozzarella, parmesan thing. But don't you now? Could you play Sam Altman for a minute? Just any, by the way, anything he's ever said. Just hit Sam Altman and hit video. Anything Sam Altman's ever said. Let's compare this. Here we go. Here he comes.
Their model provider is going to look like selling tokens. You know, they may come from bigger or smaller models, which makes them more or less expensive. They may use more or less reasoning, which also makes them more or less expensive. They may be running all the time in the background trying to help you out. They may run only when you need them if you want to pay less. They may work super hard, you know, spend tens of millions, hundreds of millions, of someday billions of dollars on a single problem
right.
That's really valuable. But we see a future where intelligence is a utility like electricity or water, and people buy it from us on a meter and use it for whatever they want to use it for. The demand that we see for that.
Now, by the way, very disturbing statement. It's about the end of, you know, of course, it's all about human obsolescence and humans not needing to think or whatever. And then eventually they'll have to figure out how to kill them all. But think about a Dave Thomas type selling that, be a little better. Dave Thomas being like, sometimes being smart takes it out of you. Sometimes being sharp takes it out of you. But we're building a real smart machine. It's going to be the smartest machine you've ever met and your best friend. And if you need a little bit of smarts, well, you can just buy it. I'm Sam Altman. Boom. Open AI. Sometimes you don't feel like being a smarty pants. You just want to buy intelligence from our big friendly machine. Our machine's brilliant. But instead, this guy's like, intelligence is a utility. You will buy it from us on a meter. You will live when we say. You will consume what we allow you to consume. We are the government. There is no government. What is the problem? The government is an illusion. Capitalism is a scam. It is fine. No one at my company who died did so in any way that could be considered suspicious, even though they are kind of suspicious. They need a Dave Thomas. They need a flow from progressive, these people. They're not doing themselves any favors. They're not helping themselves. Trump says he'll have the honor of taking Cuba. I just don't understand. Let's listen to Trump here talk about, God help us, Cuba? Go on.
I think Cuba, I don't know, in its own way, for, you know, tourism and everything else, it's a beautiful island, great weather. They're not in a hurricane zone.
By the way, this is a boomer running the country. This is what it is like when a boomer runs the country. This is what a boomer running the country feels like, invading countries, going there. This could be a nice spot for tourism. That's exactly what most boomers would be doing. They'd be asking the Joint Chiefs what countries would make the best resorts. Let's continue here.
They won't be asking us for money for hurricanes every week. But I think Cuba's seen the end. You know, all my life I've been hearing about the United States and Cuba. You know, when will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation right now. They were for a long time. Very violent leaders.
Everybody's telling him that all these nations are weak. And I don't know anything about Cuba, really, so I'm not commenting on it. But you know what? Iran was very weakened, too. Iran was a very weakened nation. Now the Straits of Hormuz are becoming a, like, unsolvable problem. Now we're playing around with the ground invasion of this Karg Island, which is where their energy infrastructure is. We're thinking about ground troops. Can you get something up about this ground troops on Karg Island or something like this? People are thinking that we're in an escalatory war that cannot end without us admitting we've made a tremendous kind of mistake here and then retreating. This is going to redesign the balance of power in the Middle East. It's certainly going to push more power to Israel and away from the United States. The Gulf allies are going to be incredibly affected by this. They've been affected by it, but it's going to even get worse. Dubai is panicking. A lot of the luxury brands that are in Dubai are panicking. And this is probably going to push a lot of people towards the relative stability of China. And this is like a geopolitical mistake on a massive scale. It's not simply going into a majority Muslim country, which is a bad idea. But there's also has geopolitical ramifications now that it's driving up the price of oil. It's going to hurt the U.S. dollar. It's going to hurt our relationship with many of our allies in the Middle East. It's laid bare that our military, while amazing, is not able to just go in there and take out Iran after, you know, selling weapons to the Ukraine and Israel for the last 4 or 5 years. Trump has talked about seizing Iran's Karg Island, but what would that look like? Probably not good. He's also weighing a seizure of Iran's critical depot on Karg Island, a move that would require U.S. boots on the ground. If tankers remain bottled up in the Persian Gulf, U.S. officials say. Oil and gas prices are rising as Iran's blockade of the Gulf's narrow strait drags on, choking off a significant share of the world's crude oil. Iran is blocking Gulf countries from exporting their oil while allowing tankers picking up Iranian crude to pass freely, keeping its own oil flowing to China and other countries. As long as the blockade holds and Gulf oil is restricted, Trump could not end the war even if he wanted to, a source with knowledge of the situation said. Well, of course he can. Of course he can't now because this is a geopolitical disaster. It's a global economic disaster. Like all these dummies that are talking about why this is a good idea, and it breaks down to some version of Iran is bad. They're bad. Whatever. But this is a geopolitical nightmare now. It's an economic catastrophe. And the people, these like dumb, you know, maybe well-meaning, maybe not, people that are trying to justify this as anything other than a strategic blunder are all being exposed as like shills. You know, people that are just, you know, completely and utterly out of the loop. This is not how you project power. You don't project power by getting your allies attacked and making a big mess of everything. You project power by not invading a country, not getting stuck in a stalemate, not having the price of oil skyrocket, and not getting your allies attacked. That's how you project power. And that power that you keep and you reserve is for when you are in a war, an aggressive war that you're confronted with, or there's something that's literally something you have to deal with. But a war of choice, largely at the behest of a foreign power, if not completely, where you're jeopardizing the entire region and the global economy is not a way to project power. It is the way a dying empire spits and sputters out. Anyone with any level of intelligence, and I'm a community college dropout, but they'll tell you that this is not the way an empire projects power. This is how they fall. This is how they spin out, where you have people without any justification running around talking about how well we're doing, gaslighting the public. Our government's completely dysfunctional, and everybody knows it, and most of the people know it. There's small groups of them that, you know, continue to believe whatever, and I don't care, you know. If you look at the polls, there's probably more people that believe, you know, the things that people are saying than I am potentially, than I would think. It's a little disturbing, but that's fine. I have friends like that. They don't care. Iran's bad. You know what they do to women? I hate it. How's this going to help? You're going to get a more hardline guy now. You're going to get a more hardline guy, or you're going to get a nuclear exchange, or you're going to get Israel, the U.S. Somebody's going to use Israel, maybe, I don't know, use nuclear weapons. Then you're going to get a generational religious war for the rest of our time on Earth, which might be short. And this is what we're going to get, because all the neoliberal retards that run around cities like New York and L.A., but here to a lesser extent, because they're too stupid here, which is a fucking blessing. All of these people that are running around these places, and they think the world is still America's plaything. They think the world is still America's plaything because they've gotten so used to gambling on the blood of other people's children and other people's money and the debt that future generations will pay back. So they still flex, for lack of a better word, that we own this world, and who the fuck does Putin think he is? We'll go over there and fuck him up. No, we won't. No, we won't. So you can share the globe or you can perish. You know, or the system can collapse under its own weight. It's pretty obvious to everybody. All these people that talk like America, there's a lot of people that want to see America's power diminish in the world. The people that are pushing this war, whether they know it or not, have done more to diminish America's standing in the world than anyone I have ever seen in my life. We're in a terribly difficult position right now, and in a very public way. In a very public way, with very few, if maybe no, good solutions. So the idea, and I've heard people say things like this about American power and history and all this stuff. They are drunk on the early 2000s. They are drunk on regime changes in places like Syria that they didn't pay attention to, or Libya, or things like that. It sended floods of refugees and destabilized the political situation in the economy of Europe. But Americans don't care about that. They don't give a shit about that. The effects of those wars haven't really been, they haven't seen that here as of yet, the way they've seen it in Italy, UK, Ireland, France, whatever. So you have a bunch of people talking about American power and the need to exert American power and confront countries like Iran. And the irony of it is that actually you've done, this is the complete opposite. The result will be the complete opposite of what you say it will be. It will be the destruction of American power. It'll send a signal around the world that our military is overextended and that, you know, without using unconventional weapons, we can't do this the way we thought we would do it. And no one in our country wants that. Nobody wants us to lose. I don't want a single life to be lost. But now we're in this situation where it's a black mark on our name. If we lose, we walk away, whatever. But I don't know what winning is. Pete Hegseth doesn't know what winning is. None of them know what winning is. No one's explained to us what winning would even look like. It's So you have to be careful. You have to be careful out there. And don't, and please, don't travel. Have the decency. I'm going to ask you now. Have the decency. Sit your American ass home. While we destroy the globe, I'm going to ask you, go to Vermont. I'm going to ask you, do not show up at a country and huff and puff in the lobby of a hotel and be the entitled American until we've gotten out of this thing. There's nothing the world wants less. There's nothing the world wants less, by the way. And if you're going to go somewhere, go to Dubai and get bombed and spend money. Take a missile and spend a buck because they're the fucking our Gulf states. Whether you like them or not, they're a little silly, couple of too many lip injections, whatever. But if you want to do a good thing for an American ally, if you're going to go on a trip, you go to fucking Qatar. You go to Dubai and get a lip filler. Go get your Botox done in Dubai. Go buy a Gucci bag in Dubai. If you're a fucking patriot, go to Dubai or Qatar. Go to one of these Gulf ally states that's taken a whole lot of shit because we went into this. Don't go to Spain. Don't go to France. Don't do that. Don't go to Italy. Stay away. Stay away. Have the decency. And I know it's not your fault. It's not our fault. But let's have the decency while we're blowing up the entire world to just take a beat. It's just fair. It's just fair. Nobody wants to hear you in the back of the cafe being like, you know, the Ayatollah is really bad. Because then they're going to throw acid on you. Because they're paying a lot more for the Saudi soda. They're paying a lot more for the black gold, for the juice. Because our government's gone nuts. Anyway, that's my message this week. Stay home. Hopefully cooler heads prevail. Get ready for the real fight. Get ready to take up arms with homeless people and confront robots in the deserted downtowns of your cities. Don't go to Spain. Don't go to Spain. You don't get tapas. How about that? Your government's blowing everyone up. No tapas. Good night.